Welcome to Mike's Camera Action. I'm Carl.
And I'm Alex.
And this week we're looking at a movie that I really like that I've been meaning to show people. So here it is. It's Arrival.
Yeah, the time has arrived for me to go see it.
Perfect. So Alex, what do you think about Arrival?
I thought it was okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's the standard, like, person of obscure humanities, like, relatively obscure humanities discipline helps alien soul and helps save the planet.
Right. That sounds like a very specific thing that you're making sound like it's a super common trope. Is it?
Quite.
Yeah?
I reckon. Like, you've got like, a lot of the, sometimes they're anthropologists, sometimes yeah. they're, sometimes they are just, like, general scientists. Mm. But, like, I feel like there's a trope of, it's not the soldier, it's the civilian who has the answers.
Right.
Stargate uses this trope a lot in the TV show. Because, what's his name? Daniel Jackson's an archaeologist or something.
Yeah.
What else was there? There was something else that I was thinking of while I was seeing this, and
I feel like it's fair that you would know more than that about, like, you would know more about that than me because you've seen a lot more like sci-fi TV shows, like Star Trek and Stargate, yeah, that kind of stuff, and I am like illiterate in that regard.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that, like, you know, it's the kid that helps, not the soldiers, or like
that's a classic.
Yeah, but it's sort of like that whole idea is just I just thought it was like, okay, it's now a linguistics person.
Okay, fair enough.
Like someone else.
But is the idea of rewiring your brain to perceive time differently through their language, overdone concept?
That's new. I have some thoughts on this concept as well.
Yeah, please. Do go on.
I don't think the human brain is meant to perceive time in that way.
No, it isn't, but that's kind of the point, I think. When
yeah.
We're talking about, like, we offer weapon, you use weapon, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where the goal is, like, no, the human brain isn't wired to do that, but in teaching their language and understanding their language, it's kind of the thing of Dr. Banks starts dreaming in their language, and then from there it starts to go on where she understands and comprehends their language and their way of writing and speaking.
Yeah. Although she never understands them speaking.
That's true, yeah.
They make the clear distinction that their writing is different from their speech.
Although she does understand what it's saying when she's actually beyond the barrier.
Yeah.
She does actually, it speaks to her and, actually no, she doesn't.
No,
yeah.
It still grumbles.
When we get the writing. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right, yeah. Interesting.
Seen
I slipped on that
more than might have. And,
yeah.
So they never actually understand it because part of me wonders whether or not the human brain could understand it and all that. These weird squid things. They're squid things, aren't they?
They are. So in the movie, they call them heptapods because they're 7 feet.
And the one that they talk to a lot, they call Abbott and Costello.
Yep.
It's funny. I watched it with subtitles and one of them refers to that. They make a distinction between them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It comes up with, like, in brackets, Costello. I'm like, I can't tell these apart.
The easy way is the one on the left is Abbott, the one the right is Costello.
Yeah.
Usually.
But it was in that weird dream sequence bit where...
did they really draw a distinction in that dream sequence?
Yeah, and I was like, I can't tell.
Which one is it, though? We've never seen them beyond the barrier.
Yeah. It was like, all right, this is bizarre.
I do really like the design of the heptapods, though.
Yeah.
Because they're so alien. Like, everything about...
Yeah.
That species is incredibly alien.
Like, you see, like, the head figure, and you're like, is this a head?
There's no visible eyes or mouth on them. Like,
no.
There's no face that one can discern.
They just make the... It's like my stomach mixed with whale noises. I described it as last night.
That's the exact way they designed it, actually.
Oh, really?
No. I don't know how they got the sounds.
I don't know, man. They did some weird stuff with Jurassic Park.
Birds mating.
I definitely liked the idea of it, and I think with the suspension of disbelief a bit more, it would have been like better.
I think the biggest thing you gotta suspend on your disbelief, for me at least, is Dr. Banks calling Big Domino. Like, it's the climax of the movie, but the whole way that happened, like, basically China's going to declare war on the alien, and they're in the process of, like, pushing the button.
Yeah.
And Dr. Banks grabs a satellite phone and calls. The Chinese general, Dr. Shang, I think.
Yeah,
that they've nicknamed Big Domino, General Shang. That's it. Because they've renamed. They've basically called him that because if he hits the button and says, no, we're blowing up the aliens, for at least, at minimum, they know four other countries are going to do the same.
Yeah, because it's Sudan, Russia, and I think one of the others.
Yeah, so they're terrified that he's going to do it, and then it's going to be all-out war on the alien, and that's going to be...
Yeah.
And who knows what that will spawn. But she calls him on a sat phone. The way she gets the number is that in the future, he shows her
his number
because... And basically, it's this moment where he basically winks to her and says, now you know it. Yeah. Like, he shows her his number and says, you know it now, don't you? And then tells her what she tells him.
Yeah.
And that's how she gets the knowledge of what to do in that scenario, to say, hey, don't blow the fuck up at the aliens. Like, let me tell you what your dead wife told you, like, on her deathbed.
Yeah.
That thing.
That you can't have known.
Yeah, she physically couldn't have known it until he told her later on.
Yeah.
So there's presumably a future out there where the aliens are where the general hits the button, blows up all the aliens, and then she still finds out later what his number is and what...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. At some point, she'll have to know those two facts.
See, I don't know whether or not it's one of those ones where, like...
I don't know, yeah.
I think it's a lot like their writing. Like, they talk about their writing, how it's, like...
It's circular. It's circular. Continuous.
Like, you can't...
No beginning or end.
Yeah, no beginning or end. It just... is there. Like, you can portray sentences and that. Like, they talk about, in the film, they talk about how if humans were to do it, you'd have to write with your left and right hand to meet exactly in the middle.
Yeah.
And so you'd need to know exactly how much space, but they don't need to know that.
Yeah.
It's just there.
Yeah, the universal language, or the language of the heptapod that Dr. Banks writes about is, it's just you write the sentence. Like, the sentence all appears at once. It's all in this circular shape.
Yeah. Which reminds me, if I were to code in that language, would that do anything?
Yeah, I wonder.
Like, is that how you get faster than light travel, by coding in that language?
That could just be the method of their interstellar travel, is just like computers that are coded in the universal language.
Yeah,
it's interesting to think about, actually.
Like what gives the this language that property that you can see into time.
Yeah.
That's not discussed in the film, so I wonder whether or not it's like one of those constant things.
Yeah. I think it's part of I think maybe their writing comes after their thought process. So they write in, I'm assuming they write in circles and in these loops because they don't perceive time, because they don't think in process of now, present, future.
Actually, one of the things I did like, though, was they talk about how the Chinese are doing it, trying to communicate, and they're playing Mahjong.
Yep.
And teaching someone game theory in order to, get a hand of it is, a reasonable thing.
Mm.
But I like the idea that, it now thinks there has to be a winner and a loser.
Yeah, it treats that language must be... Yeah, it tells them that, with humanity, there's a winner and there is a loser. That's how it is. You play the game.
Yeah, whereas, what she later figures out is that what they want is a zero-sum game. They just want...
They want both people to come away with something out of
it. Yeah, because what they want isn't now.
Yeah.
Isn't in, 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everyone in... all these humans are, going, we need to figure out why they're here.
Yeah.
What they're here for right now. What do they want? Why aren't they getting any... Why aren't they asking for anything? Why aren't they demanding something? And it's because they don't need to. They've got 3,000 years.
Yeah.
They've got all the time in the world to figure it out and for us to finally understand the problem, you know?
Yeah, for us to help them. That's the thing. Yeah. In 3,000 years, humans help them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're but they need this language now to do it, I think.
Yeah, basically they come in because at some point, way in the future, they need our help, and that's it. And so they're coming now.
Yeah.
But it's not really answered why they come now. We don't know why they come now. All we know is that they need to deliver this information to us at some point.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just... something's teetering on the edge of my, brain about the whole humanities department person helping save... I think a lot of the time it is, an anthropologist and stuff like that. Yeah, this is definitely an interesting one.
With the linguist.
Yeah.
Mm.
I thought it was good, but also I thought it was... I don't know.
I do like the approach they take with the linguist, where there's so many, little intricacies about language and, translation between language, especially when you have no concept of theirs.
Yeah.
That I like. She basically puts on the whiteboard, what is your purpose on Earth? And then has to break... And then this is for the general, Forrest Whitaker's character, and then breaks down the entire sentence. We have to figure out how we ask them a question. We have to put the word purpose. We have to use the word your, as in general you, instead of you individually, Jerry Alien. We have
Joe Alien, who's
Joe Alien.
Yeah, Joe Alien's money.
Yeah, I'm here for gold, please.
They give him gold, but that's not what the aliens are there for. It's like, thanks, but I'm also here for, you know, cancer research, please. Yeah. Help.
Send help. We don't know. And then you have to, not only that, but then have enough of knowledge of their response to then
answer
the question that you just asked them. Like, you say, what is your purpose on Earth? And they understand what you say, and they say, grubba gubba gubba gubba. And you go, oh, shit.
They make
what
the whale
mean?
Noise.
Yeah, exactly. You have no, like, you have, they have to build up, like, and they spend, I think, almost a month in the movie. Like,
they spend like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. I think they mentioned at one point it's 37 sessions, like, going into the.
Yeah, they spend like 2 months at least.
And it opens every
18
hours. So 37. Yeah. Basically,
I think she mentions that she's been doing it for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Like, she's learning an alien language.
Yeah.
There was no basis for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is crazy.
That's one of the things that blows my mind about, like, humanity now, is that we can translate languages.
Yeah.
Because it blows my mind that at some point someone managed to translate between English and another, like, you know, between French and Chinese. That was possible to negotiate between those two languages that formed independently of each other, you know?
Yeah.
It shocks me. Like, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah,
translating between languages, and then to do that to a species that thinks completely differently to us in every way is even more mind blowing.
Yeah, it's like the whole kangaroo thing where they point out a thing and they're like kangaroo, and so they call it kangaroo, but it turns out it just means I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't understand.
What's this?
Which is completely not true at all.
No.
But I love that moment where she just goes, no, it's not at all. But you get my point, right?
Like, yeah.
The way she worked, like, argues with the is Forrest Whitaker the colonel? The
colonel, yeah. But he's in charge, I think, or something.
He's the one running the operation, basically. I mean, he still has his superiors, but he's the one who's boots on the ground running that operation. I also love the CIA guy in that base, like the one CIA rep they have, who the moment they walk in, he's trying to figure out. He basically, as soon as they go in, he's like, all right, but if they're doing, like, some weird, weaponized bullshit, we got to make sure we get onto it before, like, the Russians do. Like, he's basically talking politics here, where he's like, we have to get onto their side before the Chinese do. If the Chinese argue with them and tell them we're the bad guys, we're fucked.
Yeah, it's like, what?
I just love that. As soon as they walk in, the one CIA guy is, like, off. He's, like, that's the shit he's going to. Is just like, listen, the Chinese are talking to him. They got two of them in China.
Yeah, I like the idea that there was also the guy that was watching, like, ultra-right-wing news.
Yeah.
And there's also the news site that doesn't get mentioned by name, but I'm pretty sure we all know which one they're talking about.
Yeah, she's on the phone saying, like, to her mother, I think, and she's immediately going, no, I told you that news site's crap, or that that TV show's garbage.
But then there's the tinfoil hat guy who's like, yeah, I gotta bomb the thing.
there's Alex Jones sitting there going, and the aliens are coming for us! We need to arm the civilians! That kind of thing.
Yeah, so one of the soldiers is like, yeah, man.
Yeah, we gotta blow the fuck out of them aliens. So he C4s an alien spaceship.
Yeah, doesn't do any damage to it, really.
Not the ship, no. Not at least that we see, because we don't actually see inside it afterwards except for on the other side of the screen.
Yeah, true.
That's the thing.
Actually,
we know one of the aliens dies in that.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, Abbott is in death process, meaning that he doesn't die, he's just killed in that, like, span. Because the aliens don't think past, present, future, he is just dead.
So one of my favorite scenes is the first scene where they walk into that chamber.
Yes.
And they throw the glow stick.
That's such a good shot.
And
that is such a good shot.
Like, you see them throw it in the air and it just lands.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
It's such a trippy shot where they're coming up on the scissor lift, they toss a glow stick into the air, and then the camera pans up following it, and then it just clatters into the wall.
Yeah, as if, because it's landed. Like,
yeah.
Then you see them, like, jump up, and then they just land.
I love the inversion of gravity in that scene. And it's so terrifying the way they shoot that scene.
Yeah.
Because the camera points right down this shaft, so you can see the ground, and you can see the soldiers on the ground walking beneath them.
Yeah.
And it's such a long drop.
Yeah.
And it's so terrifying to be standing over that, and you're just seeing, like, at any point, if the gravity goes, you're falling. It's a long fall down.
Yeah, and it only gets longer.
Yeah, it's terrible. That scene's like, it's such a beautiful shot, but it's so scary. I get so, like, tense just looking at it, like, oh, you're standing on what is a wall.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what? I still like the, yeah, it's, it, like, the alien spaceship was interesting.
It's properly alien.
Yeah.
Like, the thing I like about this is that the design of the aliens, their language, their ships, their method of communication and travel is all completely alien to us.
Yeah.
It's not like something we'd understand. It's weirdly shaped ships that seem to just phase in and out of reality. Like, when the ships go, they just vanish into vapor. They don't fly off into space. Yeah. They just vanish.
I was assuming they were going to turn into some sort of Megazord thing and fly
They'd
off.
All merge together.
Yeah, become the hull, that, like the 12 parts to a hull, but no, they just vanish.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting them to become like you know, they say 12 become whole or something like that.
Yeah, 12 become one.
Yeah. So you're right. I was when I first saw this kind of expecting like there to be some sort of connection to the ships between each other or a reason for their location.
Yeah.
But we don't actually... The thing is, there is that big mystery of we don't actually see the answer to that of why they're in those locations. Like they talk... they do narrate this at one point, like why are they in the places they went?
Yeah, one of them is in like the middle of WA.
Yeah, or it's just off the coast of WA in the Indian Ocean.
I saw the map. It was in WA.
Yeah, I thought it was like a little bit off to the side.
Really?
Like, yeah, it's closer towards Indonesia, like in between that gap.
No, I thought I saw on the map that it was like smack bang in the middle.
Okay, but they're basically like in all these different locations. Like you've got one in Siberia, one in the Black Sea, one over like rural America, and they talk about like trying to find the correlation.
Yeah,
and they can't find like the only two pieces of correlation they can find are maybe it's in locations that have reduced lightning strikes. But also in all of the locations they're at, also had it like this one song was like a top of the charts song in the 1980s.
Yeah.
So there's no reasonable answer that they can figure out for why they're there.
Yeah.
And they never answer that question. No. They just, it's this mystery that's just, all right, it's over. There's no answer to why they're there. They're gone now. It's just those are spots they picked.
I'm sorry, but does Julia Banks lead to like world unification?
Kinda.
Yeah, like they talk about like, at the end of the party, they talk about everyone getting together. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
But honestly, kind of. That's part of the point of the movie is that the aliens are there to unite humans.
Yeah.
Like they talk about like the different methods of why are the aliens here? Are they here to test us, give us a weapon, take a weapon, use a weapon? What are they doing? And the whole point is they're giving a tool so that humanity can band together.
Yeah.
To help each other out so that 3,000 years from now, we can help them out too.
Yeah.
Because they're going to need us. And if we keep fucking around with each other and hating on each other, then we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, so I think that's the overall message. Peace, man.
Yeah, peace, man. That's it. That's the whole point is, hey, man, unity and shit.
Yeah.
Universal language.
I don't know. I think some of the... I don't know. I just have mixed feelings about this film. Like, yeah. I really liked the beginning. I like how that does. So basically how it begins is that you got her telling a story to her daughter.
Yeah, she's telling Hannah, this is where trying to recount, like, where does your story begin?
Yeah, like, this was where your story begins, and she's holding the baby.
Yeah.
And then it's like, but actually...
You have to go further back than that.
Yeah, and then you talk about it, and then she finds out, like, Hannah... I don't know, like, part of me wonders whether or not Hannah, like, is also a mouthpiece for the heptapods.
Yeah.
In a way, like, the idea is that, like... She experiences the moments of clarity of when the word that she needs to explain to the heptapods or what the heptapods are trying to explain to her.
Yep.
Through flashbacks, flashes.
Flash forwards.
Flashes.
Yeah. Time flashes of some kind.
Time flashes of some kind with Hannah.
Yeah.
Hannah, like, asks her, you know, what's the thing where, you know, two parties get the same, it's compromised.
It could also be, one of the things I think about that is the way that, like, If you're having trouble thinking of the answer to a problem, sometimes certain things will trigger it. Like you'll just be sitting along and doing something, and then you'll catch like a sense will be triggered, or someone will say something, and you'll go that, or you'll think of something in the past that reminded you of that.
Yeah,
and you'll go, oh, that's it. But she's thinking in the future.
Yeah,
that's part of the point. So when she's saying what, like when she's trying to think of the word zero sum game, instead of remembering backwards. She has to kind of remember forwards.
Yeah, but what I mean is that the trigger is always her.
Yeah.
It's not like future Ian. It's not future her just going writing on a blackboard. It's not... At one time, there was a future her writing on a blackboard basically explaining how they use the language.
Mm.
But like, it's not future... It's not one of them from the future. It's just Hannah asking her a question.
Fair. I also think that it might be because Hannah's... Like, it might be more that... It might be more pointing towards the stock she put, like the importance she puts on Hannah. Like, her daughter is crucial and very important.
Yeah.
Even though she hasn't, even though she doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, her daughter is
in her life, that's going to be very important to her. She's going to have that memory.
Yeah.
Especially since she knows that Hannah's born today.
Yeah, that's kind of messed up.
I like the message of it, though.
Yeah.
But even though she knows everything's bound to fail, she know her daughter's going to die of a non-preventable disease, like an incurable disease. She knows her husband's going to leave because of it.
Yeah, because she tells him.
Exactly. Because she just says, oh, by the way, you got to know this. Our daughter's going to die. And then even then, she still chooses to go through with all of it. She still chooses to get married to Ian. She still chooses to have her daughter. And she doesn't change away from that just because she knows what's going to happen.
She doesn't not tell Ian. Yeah. She just follows the journey, yeah.
Like, she doesn't change anything. And I kind of like that message of how she doesn't use the knowledge to then go, oh, but can I make it better? She just goes, no, this is the path I'm going to take. I'm going to take that journey. Going to go on it.
One of the things I did like, though, was when they were talking about, they said something, and Ian, this is the first hint that you sort of get that she's remembering one of the first hints that you sort of get when she's remembering the future.
Yeah.
If someone mentions sciencey things, it's like, oh, your dad's better at it than I am.
Yep.
And I was like, hang on a minute. This is the first time we've mentioned a dad.
Oh, he's in the picture now. Mm.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Wait, just a cotton picking minute. Hold up. Where's the dad at?
But I like that. It does it well. It's not like, it's obvious enough that you the audience feels smart enough to put it together.
Yeah, it doesn't hit you over the head with it or make you feel stupid.
No, but it's at the same time, it's it's not super obvious. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't hit you over the head, but at the same time doesn't make it like so subtle that like you need 10 minutes of flashback.
Yeah. That's actually something I really like about this movie is when I finish watching it, I feel like you feel rewarded in that you get it.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense on the first watch.
Yeah, there's nothing that's like, wait, what?
Yeah, it gives you just enough where you feel like you understand what's happened, but it also doesn't just beat you over the head with it. Like, that's one of the concerns I had about The Prestige, was they just put so much stock in, like, and then Hugh Jackman cloned himself and he's been killing his clones the entire time, and they treat that like the big reveal when you figured it out half an hour ago.
I haven't seen The Prestige.
Okay. Because that's the big reveal isn't that, but they treat it like that.
Okay.
Yeah, the big reveal was supposed, like, started way earlier on, but basically the last half hour of the movie is them going, I bet you don't know it yet. That's pretty good.
I think the whole Prestige thing falls under the trap that it's trying to be a movie about magic.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to misdirect and all that, but maybe doesn't pull it off. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I think that movie is great, but it's just, I felt like it was really, like, nudging me going, hey, you bet you don't know it yet, do you? And I'm like, no, I figured it out instantly. I get it. I know how this works, you know?
Yeah.
That's something that frustrated me in that movie.
But yeah, no, what were we saying? About Arrival.
Yeah. Back to Arrival.
Yeah, Arrival doesn't do that. And Arrival makes it very... You sort of forget about her daughter, and then, like, you the way I like it is that, like, there's the build-up to realizing that she's in the future, not the past. Yeah. It's like you have some flashbacks about her asking a question. She answers it. Like, you see the drawing, Mummy and Daddy talk to animals, and you don't really see it.
Yeah.
And then later on, you see a vacant bird plaster figure. You see her with plaster figurines, and one of them's a heptapod.
Yep.
A great big black heptapod. And you're like, oh, wait, no.
And then there's also the, the real moment it sort of clicked is right when she's like, they've just come away from the, she's gone up into the heptapod ship alone and then come back down, and she's being held by Ian, and she has that moment where she says, I just realized why my husband left me. And he says, you were married?
Yeah.
And it's that moment of, oh, she hasn't been yet, because finally you've dawned on that. Like, you, both the audience and Dr. Banks realize she's now thinking through time.
Yeah, she's now like, because she now understands the language, she now thinks like them, and it's...
Yeah, it's now she's now figured it out, and she's not just dreaming in their language, she's thinking in it.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the whole thing. Like, I remember I asked my mum once, because my mum's bilingual to an extent, because her first language is Italian rather than English, although she uses Italian not much at all.
Yeah.
I asked her once whether or not she thinks in Italian while she's speaking in Italian. It sort of threw her off.
Yeah.
Yeah, she couldn't think of whether or not it was yes or no. It was just, I know a bit of Italian, but whenever I speak Italian, it's always, I have to think of the word in English, translate to Italian, then speak the Italian.
That's the thing that, I wish I were bilingual just so I knew how smoothly that could work. Because I've never been overly fluent in other languages. I've been taught other languages, but I've never been fluent.
Yeah.
So to think about, I always have to go, here's the phrase I want to think of, here's what it is in English, And then this is how I say it in Italian or in French.
Yeah.
So I've never been able to properly comprehend that. So it's a good question.
Yeah.
How that would work.
I wonder whether or not that's the extent where, whether or not if you taught kids the language of the heptapods, how messed up they'd get.
Oh, God. Could you imagine teaching just children, instead of the ABCs, their squiggles? And then...
Yeah, the kids pick it up faster and understand it better. Like,
oh, if you teach it from the beginning. Yeah. Yes.
That's a lie.
That'd be a lot of evolution there.
Apparently it's a lie, because apparently the more languages you learn, the more elastic your brain is to learn languages.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's why if you already know a couple, it's easier to pick up more.
Oh, okay.
But if you only know one, it's very difficult as an adult.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a kid and you're just around a language and you submerge yourself, you're fine.
Yeah, if that becomes the universal language and the language people use just every day, then you're going to pick up on the spirally alien language.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I'd wonder if you'd teach kids that or whether or not it would just drive them insane.
At the same time, it's not like you're suddenly jamming knowledge of the entire universe down a kid's throat.
No,
but it's that they're becoming rewired to be able to perceive all of time at once.
Yeah, I don't know, because then you'd have...
Because you're still going to become an adult. You're still going to be a teenager. You're still going to get all... Like, that time is still all there.
Yeah, like...
It's basically reality is all happening at once on this big scale. So instead of going through the spiral of now to then to beyond then...
Yeah.
It's all now is then is now. It's all happening at once and different moments are played out that way.
Actually,
it's a very different way of thought.
Can I say something? Both Banks and Donnelly represent how I'd feel rocking up to a spaceship.
Yeah.
Banks is like freaking the hell out. Like, what the hell? This is so bizarre. Mm. What? And Donnelly's like, what? Oh my God, this is so...
so cool.
So cool, yeah.
It's incredible.
I feel like I'd be like in between them in terms of like how they reacted. Because Banks basically freaks out.
Yeah, Louise is having a rough time.
She almost has a breakdown on day one.
Yeah.
And then Ian just being like, yeah.
This is incredible. And he's also the one who... Dude, him stumbling off the cherry picker onto the floor wall on that first jump is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because they're still shooting it like it's looking down.
Yeah.
So it's terrifying to see him like jump up into the air and then start sliding down a little bit. It's just scary.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
He's gonna fall.
Why did they give this character a name? He's about to die.
They introduce him and they're gonna kill him.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell?
This movie just shows that radiation suits fucking suck. Like,
yeah.
I always think about radiation suits being like very form-fitting, but they are not. The ones we have and the ones they have in this movie, it's basically a big trash bag on top of a person, and they're just kind of like flopping about. It's not like a defined, easily set helmet. It's just you put it on you and you hope for the best.
But I like that. I think that's just the cumbersome. Accurate way.
Yeah, no, it is, but it's just like... When you see them like crawling up into the ship, it seems so uncomfortable. And for the first like three meetings, they just aren't in their element. They're in these hazmat suits, and they're just like, they can't even see us right now.
Yeah, it's why Louise is like, I got to take this off.
Yeah, just rips it off like, you guys said it was fine, right? Minimal radiation?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, no, they're just making sure that you can't actually detect any radiation here.
Yeah.
I like how they bring a canary as well.
I did like that detail.
Yeah.
I really like that detail. Just, if the canary dies, get the fuck out.
Yeah, but like they've brought the bird. But like I noticed whenever the aliens speak more, the canary chirps more.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, I thought it was like a whole thing, but it turned out to go nowhere.
That they were speaking through animals.
Maybe, who knows?
I also like the design of the screen, that big like fogged out glass screen. I like the look of it where you've got dark on one side, like fogged out white on the other.
Yeah.
But then also the way it like obscures the aliens.
Yeah.
And the way one of the things I thought was really like cool with the alien design is that with that fog, you can't see the top of the alien.
No.
So it looks like, for all you know, because you can't see everything in there, it looks like it could be some part of a larger construct.
Yeah.
Like the heptapod, like the foot of the heptapod is really just a finger of some larger entity. It feels like it could be that. There's all this mystery behind it.
Yeah, it's like, and like you get some of the first mystery you see is just one of the tentacles just going, bam! And like you see it splay out and you don't expect, I didn't expect it, like... It's a tentacle. I didn't expect more tentacles.
Yeah, it turns into five.
No, it's like six or seven. Yeah, it's more than a hand. It's more than a hand. I think it's like six, so it's like three and three. Like it's symmetrical, but like there's just a hole in it that that's where they produce the ink from.
The heptapods look just really squishy.
Yeah.
Just wet.
Yeah, moist.
Oh.
What do they breathe, and how is she able to breathe it? Like,
see, there's a moment in that scene where she's like brought up into the fog side of the barrier, where it looks like she's gonna suffocate.
Yeah, she's just like, why did you bring her here?
I also really like just that sequence where it's like there's this moment where they do some really cool camera trickery in the way the set's laid out or constructed, like it might be a CG thing, where it looks like the geometry of that room beyond the barrier is like this non-Euclidean world.
Yeah.
Where like it seems as if she's peering over a ledge, but it's really just the floor that seems at an odd angle with her foot.
See,
it's really cool.
See, that's one of the things that always gets me about spaceship and space travel. If I have artificial gravity, where is the gravity? Like, as in like, what way do I point it? Can I constantly shift it and do that?
It seems like the aliens do that though.
Yeah.
Because they have the gravity on the human side brought down to one side, and they seem to be able to just like swim or fly through theirs.
I think they swim through the whatever they breathe.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the reason why they don't actually need the gravity in the same way humans do.
But it seems like they use that. It seems like they're very able to. It seems they are able to control the gravity because there is that moment where Abbott drops the gravity so that they fall into the shaft when the C4 is going off.
Yeah, they like put out that like.
Yeah, which is fucking cool.
Yeah.
I love that moment where it's just like the whole gravity in the room just goes and just pulls them backwards.
Yeah.
It's such a cool shot when the camera inverts.
It's like, what? Yeah, no, this film is full of like a really cool things.
Mm. I definitely recommend the hell out of seeing it. Really
I probably
should.
Would too. Like, I'd recommend it's a good watch. I wouldn't say it's like my favorite film of all time.
Oh, it's not my favorite, but I do really like
this
movie.
Yeah, it's a good film.
I also had one more note that I just want to talk about, which is 12 of these alien vessels pop up all over the world. And there's that moment on like TV reports where they're talking about how no one knows, like all these countries are talking to each other and no one can put a finger on whose they are. Like they're still entertaining the idea that it could be another human, like putting these in over the world. But if the USA, China, and Russia all tell you that they don't know and they themselves did not do it,
I'd be very worried.
Then it's safe to say that it's an alien race that's put them there, because between them and their allies, no one has the resources or the scientific knowledge to make some sort of weird anti-gravity ovoid.
Between China and its allies, yeah. And like America and its allies, yeah. Yeah.
And if they've all got a like weird ovaloid like floating metal object in their skies and no one can tell you what it is, chances are they didn't do it. It's not
just
one of them.
Just some dude in like New Zealand putting one together. Go, my pretties.
Like it's not going
to
be...
This will put us on the map.
It's definitely not North Korea. Like it's got to be someone with some significant science and that we can't even comprehend. So it's got to be no country on the planet.
Yeah,
that,
pretty much.
Yeah, and of the resources to build it.
Yeah, the resources to build it is what's crazy.
Yeah.
Because they float.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. There's no technology known that would cause this to exist. And the fact that they just kind of like, we never see them arrive. We just kind of see one. The only one we see arrive is in Venezuela.
Yeah.
Where we see it like floating in. That's the closest we get. So I have a feeling they arrive, like they appear in the same way that they disappear, where they just kind of materialize into reality.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they all arrive that way, but no one ever noticed because they're in the backwaters. One of them's in Siberia, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. But some of them do appear over, like, crowded areas. Like, the one in Sierra Leone, that's directly over a city. The one in Venezuela is directly over a city. Like, we can see shots of those ones where they're still in urbanized areas.
True.
So people would have seen these things appear or just materialize out of thin air.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, let's jump into let's talk about our next movie. We're going to be doing... So this is one that I saw come out ages ago and was interested in it because of how weird it looked.
Yeah.
Like, this is definitely probably one of the weirdest movies we've done on this show. It is Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe plays a dead guy.
Yeah. I remember seeing the trailer for that years ago, and I was like, I need to see this. This seems so funky.
Yeah.
So we've just seen that's on Netflix now, so we'll definitely give it a watch.
Yeah, we're going to give that one a watch.
Till next week.
We'll just vanish. It's fine.
We'll just dematerialize.